concrete-smelling air and breathe in salty lungfuls of traffic fumes and ocean and burning rubbish. She had a massive pang when she realised that the car wasn't stopping to let Cam or Pyrrha out too, that she hadn't listened properly, that she had been selfish, that she hadn't understood the implications. She blurted, "I don't have a hat! Or a mask! There's hardly any smoke. I still need one! I still need them!" Crown scrounged in her pockets and took out two flimsy soft-shell masks, winding one around her head and face. She had a hood on her jacket, and she unsnapped it from the collar to settle it around Nona's head and shoulders. "I've got chemscreen on," she said, and tucked Nona's arm into hers. "Come on, let's live a little." By that point, the car had burred to life again and was reversing back down the street. Nona hesitated. But Camilla hadn't used the special safe word, after all, hadn't used any of the codes they'd agreed on that meant Nona couldn't. That meant Nona was being ordinarily selfish, not dangerously selfish. And seeing Crown in the city sunshine was fantastic. A couple of people had stopped on the street to gawk at her, hatless and golden, then moved on hurriedly when they saw her gun. "But Camilla," she began.
"I've got as much right to you as Camilla does," said Crown, still smiling. "In another world, I might have been the one looking after you, you know. And I think Camilla does a bit too much looking after. You're not so much younger than she is, after all."
This resembled some of the darker and more resentful thoughts in the back of Nona's head. She mumbled, "But I love Camilla."
"Do you love Camilla? In love with Camilla?"
Crown sounded amused and weaved her around a little stand that was selling magazines and candy. The streets were thick with people meandering home before the hottest part of the day kicked in, but not hurrying yet, which meant it hopefully wasn't that late.
"Maybe you could be the one to melt her icy heart. You're cute, on your best days, adorable. But I'm not sure you're her type."
Nona flushed. Suddenly being treated as an adult made her feel out of her depth, like when a wave knocked her off a sandbar and her feet went out from beneath her. She didn't know what to say or how to act, and floundered toward the shallows. "She's not your type either," she said. Crown stood back from the road as a barrage of open-backed trucks rattled past. There was a piercing whistle in her direction, and she ignored it with a disdainful toss of her big yellow hair. She looked down at Nona and asked cheerfully,
"How do you know my type?"
Nona thought it was obvious. "It's the way you look at people."
"Tell me," demanded Crown.
There was a deep velvety spark of mischief in her eyes, and Nona thought again how lovely they were, like the flowers in the sexy shampoo advertisement.
"Come on, I'll die if I don't know. I love being told about myself."
Nona rose quite eagerly to the challenge. "You look at Commander We Suffer like you want her to think you're into her, but you aren't at all. It's just something you're doing with your eyelashes," she said. "But that's no help figuring out your type, because I don't know what the Commander looks like. You don't like Pash at all. But I don't know what she looks like either. You're scared of Pyrrha, and you do think she's nice looking. But you're confused when you think that, so you don't look at her very much. You want Camilla to cuddle you, but not in a sexy way. I think you want Camilla to look at you like she looks at me, and you're in love with the—"
A hand went over the mask at Nona's mouth.
When she looked up at Crown, in that press of people and the clinging smoke, she could see that the eyes above the soft-shell mask had lost their soft purple gleam and were dark, with the heavy amber brows drawn low over them. She said in a different voice,
"All right, Nona, I've heard enough."
Nona, when the hand was withdrawn, said thickly, "You're mad at me. Shame on you." The trucks had passed and everyone surged together across the street in one big slosh of humanity. Crown, half stricken, half laughing, had put her arm back through Nona's and they hurried down the street toward the school. She said,
You remind me very much of someone when you make that face. I'm sorry, cutie, I got frightened. Can you forgive me? I won't ever ask you to do it again. Tell you what, I'll owe you an ice cream.
Nona was a little bit mollified.
I don't want an ice cream, thanks, she said, on her dignity. You shouldn't ask me things if you don't want me to tell the truth about them.
I know. I do it all the time. I've never learnt. It's awful. My sister says that. I'd ask her how I looked in an outfit, and she'd always say exactly what was on her mind. And sometimes, all I wanted was for her to tell me I looked perfect, even if I didn't.
Crown sighed. The picture of tragedy. And horribly, she was always right.
But you always look beautiful, said Nona.
That's why I should ask you what I look like, and ask my sister what I'm feeling, said Crown. You'll always tell me I look beautiful, and she'll always tell me what I want her to think.
This is the school, isn't it?
Where you work? They would have had to get buzzed in, except that someone was already standing there, unlocking the door with a key. It was the Angel. Nona flew down the street in a panic that the door would close without her. She cried out, Wait! Nona was completely winded by the time she got to the foyer, with the Angel holding the door for her. Nona bent double and panted, and when she straightened up she was shocked to find the Angel looking even worse than she had on the two previous days, with her coat still on and Noodle sitting patiently on his leash.
Oh, said Nona, panting. How late? It's over. What time?
Despite looking as though she hadn't slept, or, if she had, had slept in the clothes she was currently wearing, the Angel grinned. This made her ears go up slightly with the smile, which Nona loved.
Get your breath back, said the Angel kindly.
They're just finishing up with break. I was getting myself sorted. Crown had jogged to catch them up and slipped through the door before it closed.
You see, said Crown, not winded at all, filling up the doorway. What did I tell you? You're fine.
The Angel and Crown sized each other up. Crown was much younger and bigger and taller and more exquisite. And when she pulled her mask down and smiled, the Angel's eyes widened a little bit. Not in a you-are-so-attractive way, either, Nona noted. The Angel was a bit shocked, like Crown looking the way she did was maybe illegal. They shook hands in perfect amity, but the Angel looked her over and said,
No guns in this building. That's the rule, I'm afraid.
Oh, I wouldn't ever scare the children, said Crown sincerely, but the Angel said,
No,
but nobody's going to be interested in my lesson if they see you. We're doing how sound moves today, and they'll be bored stiff. Crown laughed with very white and even teeth.
I'm sorry to say I sympathise. I was terribly stupid in my lessons when I was a girl.
How long ago was that? 5 minutes, said the Angel, and Crown laughed again.
Why can't she come up? I want Hot Sauce and the others to meet her, said Nona, embittered. It's not fair. We got to see beautiful Ruby's baby. I've had a horrible morning and I want them to look at her.
Nona, I've had a horrible morning too, so have mercy on me, said the Angel candidly. It would make teaching sound waves impossible if anyone got a glimpse of your friend.
Can't you come back afterward? Are you family? Do you know Jolie? I'm afraid I've never met you before, she added to Crown.
Crown had crouched down and was scratching Noodle between his ears. Noodle was responding by thumping two of his hind legs at once and opening his mouth and panting.
Oh, I'm Camilla's partner, but I can't stay.
I see. Lovely to meet you, said the Angel, unaware of how her eyebrows betrayed her. Like everyone else in the world, to Nona seemed unaware of how their eyebrows betrayed them, by immediately saying, plain as day,
Camilla? Really? Camilla?
Which Nona thought was unfair. Crown was really very nearly pretty enough for Camilla.
Nona, can you take Noodle for a moment? I've got to get the tuning forks and he's going to make the most unrighteous howl. He can't stand the things.
When she had passed the leash to Nona and gone through the door with one last look at Crown, Nona crouched to give Noodle her hand to lick and said accusingly, If Camilla hears you said that, she'll be furious.
That's probably why I said it, admitted Crown, with genuine contrition. I have a ripple of evil running through my soul. I know I do. But it wasn't that bad a lie, was it, Nona?
Don't you think it'll raise Cam's status? Don't you think I've done her a favour?
Nona thought about it. Camilla doesn't need raising. You could have raised my status by saying you were mine, she added. They would have believed it. We're both very attractive.
Crown laughed in her lovely, husky, rippling way. And there you go, reminding me of someone completely different.
Then she dropped to a crouch again. But instead of dipping low and scratching Noodle, she gently pressed her thumb to the underside of Nona's chin. She was smiling now, but she was smiling as though Nona had said something a little sad, and her eyes didn't sparkle any more. They hadn't gone hard, as they had at the roadside, but they were shadowy.
You, darling, I know what you are, even if they refuse to see it, she said softly. All I can say, sweetheart, is I envy you more than anyone else in the universe.
15.
But with this bomb dropped, Crown refused to stay and tell, and Nona crouched there too open-mouthed to run after her. In any case, Nona did not have to mourn long the fact that she was late for work and none of her friends had got to see Crown. Honesty had seen Crown leave from his window seat, and she was gratified when Born in the Morning and Honesty gave each other rabbit punches over who got to ask Nona how old she was and which of their names Nona had to mention to her in the future. Hot Sauce also came over to stroke Noodle and said,
Good, you're here. Don't want you to be dead.
Which was a lot for Hot Sauce to say. Nona recalled what Pyrrha had said about Hot Sauce. She looked her over carefully. It wasn't as easy reading her as it was reading Pyrrha. Hot Sauce constantly stood as though she were disconnected from her own head. Her body and her mind seemed to actively ignore each other, and her burns sometimes made her look rigid in a way that scared the tinies and foxed Nona's senses. Now Hot Sauce stood like she hadn't slept very well. But Hot Sauce never stood like she'd slept very well. Her eyes were wrinkled, like she'd squinted them a lot. Maybe against bright light. Or smoke.
Would you be mad if I died? Said Nona.
Yes, said Hot Sauce simply. You're my crew.
This made Nona deliriously pleased, but then deeply anxious.
Hot Sauce, she said timidly. I don't want you to be sad or mad if anything happens to me. Promise not to be sad. I don't like it on your face.
There was a flicker of surprise across Hot Sauce's eyelashes, but then the others ragged her at the idea that anyone would be sad if she died, and they got into an argument about who would inherit her share of fruit that day, as it hadn't been bagged, which turned into another fight between Born in the Morning and Honesty, who had not forgiven each other for the rabbit punches, and both of whom started promising their worldly goods to anyone who wasn't each other. Honesty had recovered, although his eye looked even puffier and more multicoloured than it had the day before. The teacher had given him some painkillers to take, but he had cunningly spat them out and dried them for resale, so he was entirely happy. Nona came away promised, on Born in the Morning's death, a pen that wrote in three different colours, and on Honesty's, his collection of paper throwing stars. Hot Sauce didn't say anything after that, just sat by the window, alternately watching the angel, packing little metal pins away into a box and chatting to the main teacher after the hour of science, looking fragile still but more rested after teaching and a coffee, and the window. Nona did not have to wait to ask Hot Sauce what she was going to get told. The teacher, obviously relieved to see her, Nona said she hadn't been able to get to school that morning for unexpected reasons, and the teacher gently and compassionately didn't ask, which made Nona cross again because she could see she was thinking about Pyrrha, gave Nona the job of taking down the old paintings from the peg on the wall and putting up fresh ones that had been done last week.
Nona had to stand on a chair, and Hot Sauce quietly held the chair for her, and everyone else was busy taking out the mats for nap time. It was bewildering how quickly the day went when you had had the morning taken away from you.
Hot Sauce said, "The angel was dropped off in a car today at the end of the street."
"I didn't see."
"A quarter in the doorway," said Nona, taking her focus away from balancing, then refocusing so she didn't fall off the chair. She unclipped a piece of brown sheeting and admired the painting on it briefly, and then she said, "Is her being in a car good or bad?"
"When the school building watcher saw she wasn't here this morning," said Hot Sauce, "he left."
"Okay."
"He came back 20 minutes ago. It's an organised watch."
"By who?"
"I don't know. But she's being protected. Her vehicle had a grill," said Hot Sauce.
Nona had to admit that she did not understand the significance of the vehicle having a grill. Hot Sauce explained it was so that you could drive it through rocks or people.
"So what do we do?" Nona wanted to know.
"I guess someone's looking after the angel already."
It was beginning to dawn on her that this level of care was strange when directed at someone whose contribution to the world was Noodle and the Hour of Science, which was truly wonderful, but only really important to the refuge school. She added doubtfully, "Why is the angel so special?" The main teacher materialised behind them.
"Nona, aren't you going home for lunch?"
It was then that Nona realised that nobody had come to pick her up.
"I don't know," she said. "Can I stay here until Cam comes?"
The nice lady teacher looked troubled, then tried to hide it. Because she really wasn't that much older than Camilla, Nona didn't think the hiding worked. She was really just a baby herself, Nona thought suddenly.
"Of course you can. Why don't you take one of the lunches and get yourself a mat? There's plenty to go round. It seems like everybody's eating at home today."
Hot Sauce said, "They're raising a broadcast, is why."
"What?"
This startled the teacher.
"Do you mean from the government building? This is the first I've heard of it."
But when Hot Sauce stood there, stolidly, not elaborating, the teacher said,
"And here's us without a working radio. Hi, AIM, do you know anything about this?"
The angel came over. She had another coffee clutched in her hands and was stirring sugar into it vigorously, despite the fact that it was deep into the heat of the day. She said,
"Heard what?" "The children, Hot Sauce and Nona, say there's going to be a public broadcast. I thought they ran out of money for that a year ago. I've certainly heard nothing but pirate radio for months. Is it going to be about the port? Do you think they'll start arrests?"
The angel took a blistering sip of coffee, even though she must have known it was much too hot. She was holding it gingerly through her shirt sleeves. She sipped anyway in order to draw the moment out. Nona was interested that the angel didn't even seem surprised, that she only looked extra sodden and tired.
"I have heard something about that, yes," she said. "Who knows?" "It's strange. They would always put out a paper notice before."
"That was in the old days. I guess they must have been in a hurry."
"Does that mean, are we finally going to hear about Jolie? Little pictures," said the angel. "Come talk to me in the kitchen."
When they had gone, Nona said to Hot Sauce,
"Should we go listen to a radio too? There's one down at the dairy."
"Don't need one," said Hot Sauce. "I know what they'll say. Who's here?"
The teacher had been right, and mostly everyone's parents had come to take them home, or the children had drifted off at a prearranged signal. Younger brother Father had come to retrieve Born in the Morning, and beautiful Ruby had gone home too. There was nobody to come and get Honesty, but he had taken his packed lunch and slunk off to sell his pills. Nona disapproved. It was too hot for drugs. This left Nona, Hot Sauce, and Kevin. Kevin had arranged 6 mats in a pile and curled up knees to nose in the debris of a hastily eaten lunch,
all the good bits out of the cold noodles, the centres out of all the sandwiches. Nona reported this. Hot Sauce said, "You'll stay, Nona." "Yes," said Nona, who would sooner have died on the spot than refuse, and amended after a thought, "Unless Cam comes to get me, that is. I don't want Camilla to worry about me today." "Sure," said Hot Sauce. Nona didn't want the packed lunch, but anyone who might care about what she ate was off in the kitchen, so she got to do exactly as she pleased. She sucked on ice cube after ice cube, and then, in a gluttonous excess, chewed half a pencil to splinters. She loved the cool sandy core of grey stuff and the painted, painful crunch of the wood, which came away to bits in her teeth. Hot Sauce watched, mild and unafraid, and drank a tiny, sweating bottle of strawberry yogurt drink. After that, they lay down on two mats each, piled atop each other, in the shadiest part of the room closest to the water pipes. Nona found that she was very tired. She just wanted to lie down, not to sleep, but to push her hair out of the way of her neck and try to become cool. She was always a little afraid of sleeping now. She lay down on her side, where her hip bones could be relied upon to stick into the mat and hurt a little bit, and hoped that would be enough. Thankfully, Hot Sauce showed no signs of sleeping either. She lay there on the mat on her side, and did not take her cone of vision away from the little staff room door that the angel and the main teacher were ensconced behind. "Hot Sauce," Nona said softly, trying to keep herself awake. "What's the broadcast going to be about?" "Necromancers," said Hot Sauce. She waited for Hot Sauce to elaborate. Hot Sauce refused. Nona said, "Something good about you know what, or something bad." Hot Sauce said, "It's never good with necromancers." "You shouldn't call them that." Hot Sauce didn't respond in either praise or censure. Nona struggled to explain why and ended up with the pathetic, "It's not nice."
"Zombies, then."
Nona didn't think that was much better.
"How do you know about it?" she asked, already halfway to knowing.
"Heard about it last night."
"Last night at the burn cages," Pyrrha said in her brain. Nona picked the long white filaments off her fingernails until some of them went red and started bleeding, and then she tucked her hands underneath herself so that nobody would see them stop bleeding just as quickly. She did not say, "From who?" Instead, she said, very hesitantly, "Last night in the park." But Hot Sauce did not get angry, or even really surprised. She didn't react in the way that Our Lady of the Passion might. She stared at the door unwaveringly instead. She blinked once, slowly, and that was it.
"Were you there?"
she asked in a slightly different voice.
"No."
"Don't go to the park at night."
"I don't want to," said Nona fervently.
"Not good for a girl like you," said Hot Sauce, like she wasn't 14 and like Nona wasn't 19, or, more important, 6 months, just about.
Did the you-know-whats die?"
Hot Sauce misunderstood her question.
"They can die," she said. "They die like anyone else, so don't believe they can't."
"But did these?"
"Yes, too quickly," said Hot Sauce. "Someone high up took them out before they burned. Sniper rifle. Stupid when people think you have to destroy the brain or they don't go. Don't really die, not even if you burn them."
Hot Sauce, when making long speeches, always ran her sentences into each other, as though they were piled up in traffic. Nona sat up feeling a little bit dizzy and hot, and made it look as though she were checking on Kevin. She didn't quite know if Hot Sauce bought it. Kevin, after a good feed, was reliably dead to the world for at least 40 minutes. But when she lay back down on her side, facing Hot Sauce, Hot Sauce didn't look suspicious or pitying or anything like that. She stopped watching the door and stared up at the ceiling instead, the shiny, glassy, crinkly bits showing where her shirt rucked up in the middle and where it peeked out at her neck. Hot Sauce said quietly, "Your people at the park?" Nona swallowed. "One of them, I think."
"Okay," said Hot Sauce.
Do any of the others?" Nona didn't know how to ask. She didn't quite know how to say, "Are you in Blood of Eden?" But Hot Sauce simply touched a finger to her lips for shh, then raised three fingers, then pointed to herself. Nona was proud that she was long past counting on fingers.
"You," she whispered, "and Honesty, and someone else."
Hot Sauce nodded. Nona guessed again.
"Born in the morning."
"You mean born in the morning," said Hot Sauce.
"That's what I said," said Nona.
Hot Sauce said,
"Yes, one of his fathers is active."
"Blood of Eden." But Hot Sauce pressed her finger right on Nona's mouth. Nona, seeing the flinch of alarm in her face, obediently tried to clamp her mouth shut before Hot Sauce had to shut her up, which had the effect that she nearly bit Hot Sauce. But Hot Sauce said fervently,
"No, never."
"Why?"
"Traitors," said Hot Sauce vehemently. "Fat cats, zombie lovers."
Nona was a little bit tickled at the idea of Pash and We Suffer being called fat cats and zombie lovers. She didn't like Crown being called either a fat cat or a zombie lover, though, and certainly not a traitor. She said,
"Not all of them. Some of them are good."
Hot Sauce said,
"Are you?"
"No," said Nona swiftly. "They sometimes talk to us, my family," she added. Hot Sauce only said,
"Yeah, well, they sell us guns."
Lying there, faces close, Nona had the comfortable feeling that she and Hot Sauce had crossed another barrier, just like the time she had been asked to join the gang, and the time she had told Hot Sauce she loved the city. It was painfully sweet lying there whispering, even if it was half-truths or quickly shut-up truths, spoken softly so that Kevin and the teachers didn't hear you. Sweet enough that she reached out and touched Hot Sauce on the hand without thinking, without remembering all of Camilla's warnings not to touch anyone. But Hot Sauce didn't mind. She put her fingers over Nona's, and Nona thrilled to it. Hot Sauce said,
"You're nice. I wish you were my sister."
Nona's cup of joy was full.
"I'll be your sister if you like."
"Never had sisters. Only brothers," said Hot Sauce.
"Younger or older?"
"Older."
"Were they nice?"
"Yeah."
"How did they die?" asked Nona. Hot Sauce thought about it.
"Don't know," she finally said. "They were setting up the turrets. One of the minions made it through with a sword."
"They're nuts about swords. Wild. I practice with one, so I won't freak out like my brothers did. We couldn't get close, though. Afterward, thought they might be scarecrows."
When she saw that Nona didn't understand, she added,
"Dolls. Lures. They look like normal bodies lying down, or sitting or standing. But when you go too close, they explode. Bones, everything."
Nona squeezed one foot and then another. Her toes got terrible pins and needles, but she liked the sensation when she unsqueezed, that sudden sense of relief.
"What happened after that?" she asked.
"Our base? We surrendered. White flag, let them in," said Hot Sauce. "My cousin put all the fertilizer we had in a truck, drove it into their troop. They don't sense tech, don't believe what they say, engines or anything. He got a bunch of them when it exploded. Minions, wizards, both."
After a pause, she said,
"It got him too."
Nona said, "I wish nobody had been got." This time it was Hot Sauce's turn to not understand.
"It's okay. First necromancer who gets in range, I shoot," she said.
Nona shuddered again, all the way from her hips to her toes. Hot Sauce patted her hand and said pragmatically,
"You have aircon sweats."
"No," said Nona, and it was the first time she had admitted it to anyone, or at least anyone who wasn't herself.
Some deep well of need and terror welled up in her, and then, before she could walk it back and without even really wanting to, she did it. She told Hot Sauce the secret. Hot Sauce thought about it. She looked at Nona, and then she thought about it again.
"There's a clinic in town," she said. "The Angel works there. Not always. Some evenings."
Nona clapped her hands together softly in sheer delight. Pyrrha always said it was her most disgusting habit.
"That's how you knew she was a doctor," she said. "That's why she helped Honesty." "Yeah, I went to see her once," said Hot Sauce a little grudgingly, as though she didn't quite want to share.
Then she unbent and said,
"I'd been shot at."
That explained a lot.
"Did you have a bullet in you?"
"No, it missed. Broke my collarbone when I dodged."
Before Nona could say anything else, Hot Sauce said,
"Your problem. Talk to her."
"It's not going to help," said Nona. Hot Sauce flicked her nose thoughtfully.
"There's an organ market," she said. "Sometimes they're cheap."
"No, no. Don't worry, Hot Sauce, please. Don't tell the others my secret," added Nona in a hurry, alarmed. "You are literally the only one who knows. You know, in case something happens. You have to keep this between you and me. You have to promise. You have to promise right now."
"Okay," said Hot Sauce.
"Then I promise."
"Okay," said Nona.
She was very touched when Hot Sauce got up and wriggled out of her jacket and made to put it over the thin, slippery blanket. Nona said,
"Don't. Give it to Kevin."
And so Hot Sauce put it over Kevin. Kevin did not move, and for a moment Nona panicked that Kevin had died from eating the insides of 5 sandwiches. But Kevin made a sort of puppyish snuffling sound and wriggled underneath the blanket where the jacket was, so that was all right. Nona felt a great sense of peace and calm when Hot Sauce came and lay back down beside her. She let her eyelids flutter down, and was annoyed when they did not want to flutter back up. She struggled heroically to keep them open, even using her fingers, until Hot Sauce stopped her.
"You can sleep if you want," said Hot Sauce. "I'll be here."
"You won't tell, will you, Hot Sauce?"
"No," said Hot Sauce, and, "I'm here, Nona. I'll look after you."
"I love you, Hot Sauce," she said.
Exhausted, Nona felt Hot Sauce touch her hand very lightly, very gently. The last thing she heard before falling asleep was Hot Sauce saying,
"Don't be soppy."
But it didn't sound like she meant it.
John 8:1. The ash never made them feel too sick for long, but sometimes they blacked out together. Only for seconds, really no time at all, but he didn't like it. He'd never liked losing control. He'd never liked losing consciousness. In the dream, she knew he could not be coaxed to sleep unless she stood in the doorway, or in the worst times, stroking her thumb between his eyebrows, down the bridge of his nose. In the dream, she did not fear sleeping, but she did not know how to do it herself. Her body was a mystery to her. She did not understand what it meant or signified. She would suddenly collapse and sleep where she fell, shocked into unconsciousness by exhaustion, and wake wherever he put her, in whatever makeshift bed he had been forced to cook up, sometimes old stained mattresses, sometimes baby-soft skin hammocks. They had to trek all the way back down the hill on the side where the waters weren't rising and back up the road to a crumbled-down concrete building he'd found. All day they transferred their things, their meat, their buckets of water, their soggy blankets that they pinned up to dry so they would have somewhere to sleep. It took them multiple trips. They didn't bother to start a fire. They weren't really cold. But it was dark, because the ash kept falling, and he set up a long line of torches, putting them on windowsills and balancing them upward so that their thin yellow light was strung across the room. This highlighted his face in strange ways. It made his brown skin bluish and the white ring around his black iris a satiny gold.
When they were settled, he said,
"We got some attention up front, 'cause people thought we were trying to get media jobs with some excellent deep fakes. They thought we were playing a game or giving people a puzzle, maybe doing some branding. Branding, then. Talk about late-late-stage capitalism, right? How far can consumption as praxis go? But I mean, fair enough. It didn't look real."
He said, "Result was that nobody turned up to take us away to Area 51. Almost nobody even noticed us. We were just one voice in the wilderness, and all the other voices were louder. It was original, at least, you know. We got a handful of conspiracy theorists, some skeptics, and some locals who thought it was a joke. Em said, 'Invite them in to see.' So we did, taped them, said they could do whatever tests they wanted, showed them everything, got it on camera, managed a crowd of about five. Five plus us and Ulysses and Titania and all the other corpses I had up and walking around. More people there were dead than alive."
He said,
"Two of the audience members walked away afterward. One didn't say anything. One freaked out and said he was calling the cops. Only one of them accepted it. Turned out he was one of those flat earthers who still believed despite the Mars installation. Nice guy. Drank a beer with us before he left."
He said, "Then we took off. Thread after thread on message board after message board. People wanting proof. People asking what the fuck it meant. People talking about the Lucifer telescope and saying we were aliens. People calling me the Antichrist, which was a trip. People writing up these long posts on how the trick was done, how I got the meat into the pie. Was I fake? Was I real? If I was real, what did it mean? Suddenly, there were hundreds of people, all there at our front door. They came in caravans. They were sleeping in their cars or putting up tents. A hell of a lot of them had flown out internationally."
He said, "Some of them wanted to see the miracle. Some of them wanted my help, like, 'Oh, you're the magical death man. Can you do something about my body? Can you fix my fibromyalgia?' Thing was, I could. That surprised me. I could take out their tumours. I could fix their macular degeneration. Big damage was easy, unless they'd actually lost the limb or whatever. Couldn't grow those back. But I spent hours and hours a day playing Jesus. That was nice. Those were some of the nicest hours I got to spend."
He said, "But when you're doing the whole, 'Go, my child, your knee cartilage is fixed,' you're going to get a lot of visitors. I had to turn people away because I had to eat, I had to sleep, even though I didn't want to. Em had brought in her best friend, the nun, and I was worried I was going to get the Antichrist bit from her, too. But she was just like, 'Stop doing this. Read your Bible. This was Christ's whole problem.' I was like, 'What are you talking about? Jesus cured the lepers and everyone was all, hooray, thanks, man.' Em's nun was all, 'Are you kidding? Christ never said no and never asked anyone to pay and got way too much attention and brought the heat down on everybody. Christ didn't keep to office hours,' she said. 'Don't do that.' He said, 'So, we limited Jesus' stuff to 1 hour a day, and I always had to eat breakfast. But by then, the whole world was on our doorstep.' He added, 'We knew it was going to be a big problem. You've got this guy with an army of upward of 40 walking corpses that he acquired legally, but was meant to bury a while back. It's time for some hard conversations. He's curing cancer, that's great, but he's bookended by two zombies that they've dressed in outfits. That's bad.
You've got a wizard out in the Wop-Wops who's now got blanket bans from nearly every video upload site, and a whole bunch of people have entered the country because of his YouTube channel. The government isn't all, love that small business entrepreneur spirit. The government says, this is a cult. He said, they came in thousands, pilgrims and tourists and skeptics and believers and CIA plants and wannabe stars and priests and oddballs. And here we were, squatting in this building, trying to prepare a gambit for every eventuality. But we were in the middle of a shanty town and an international controversy. And we knew any moment a riot squad was going to bust in. And we were all living in three rooms together and we were scared. Turned out to be a huge fucking blessing that we had a nun on cast, as she bought us some breathing room. She applied to the Vatican to argue about whether or not it was a miracle, because I'd been baptized. Didn't mention that I'd only gone to parachute because of the underage drinking. But she was a lifesaver. And then A brought in his little brother, who was a hedge fund manager. A Junior was useless, but he was a darling. I couldn't fault A for adding him to the mix. All of us were getting frightened. We'd bit off more than we could chew. We were gathering the people we loved and closing the doors. He said, at that point, the government asked us to come in quietly with our hands up. He said, we didn't want to. We always said, they want us. They have to come get us. We're not getting separated. We're not getting disappeared. Brave words. But stopping them was on me, you know. You've got two scientists and an engineer and a nun and a lawyer and a banker and a cop and an artist. That's not a defense force. That's a cop and six different kinds of nerd. Pete was great, but like, ministry ties or no ministry ties, a big part of her career was going around to the local high school throwing blue light discos and telling the drugs kids that they shouldn't be doing drugs. She'd won medals for competition shooting back north in Hamilton, but we're not talking Jesse James, we're talking Hamilton. He said, the cryo lab was about 100 meters across. Concrete and steel and cladding sat on 2 acres of repurposed farmland. I had 40 corpses on hand, and a lot of them were in a state with partials from earlier testing. We had a lot of flash frozen brain matter. I couldn't harvest anything from Ulysses and Titania. I refused. A&M were making black jokes about taking volunteers from the crowd for the skeleton army. One day, we ran out of time before those jokes could become suggestions. P called ahead. She'd betrayed the police for us. Told us the riot squad was about 30 minutes away and they were carrying big guns. She chose us that day, not her career. I always loved her for that. She'd adored being a cop. He said, I knew what I needed. I needed to cut the place off, wall it up, do something impressive to buy us time. Let them know we couldn't get pushed around. So I pulled up walls close to 3 foot thick, what you'd now call perpetual bone, staked 6 feet down. G ran the numbers for me. I didn't listen to his warnings about plumbing, so I busted the outside water pipe. But that was the worst that happened. The cops arrived in 30 minutes and tried a battering ram. Industrial cutters, everything. They worked for hours, but nothing even penetrated. It was perfect. Except that I'd forgotten to do air holes. So I had to make some of it permeable up top, but like, fine, we caught it early, nobody suffocated.
He fell quiet. After a while she prompted, you made it from your bodies? He said,
nah. I decided I didn't want to touch any of the bodies, not only Titania and Ulysses. They'd all been through a lot.
It was at this point that he had the grace to look embarrassed. He said,
I'm not proud of this, but, well,
like we were on farmland, with farm animals. Big things with mass to spare. The field, just over the road from us, had over 80 head of cattle. Field over that had a lot of sheep, and the bush was full of old bones. I had to get creative. We had to lock C in the kitchen when she found out so she could throw up in private for a while, and we wouldn't let her look at it. Thankfully it was dark, so there wasn't too much to look at.
He said,
"It wasn't clean. I had to unsleeve them to get two piles to work from. Softs and bones, and it was not beautiful. But it worked. A 3-foot-thick shield of meat, bone and sinew spread over 2 acres of Greytown land. You could see it on Google Earth. Kind of pretty from far off. Sort of pink."
He said,
"And then the government was like, 'Okay, let's talk.'"
He said,
"It had worked, and we were all okay. And the rest of the world knew too. You can't erect a 2-acre cow and sheep shield without it making the news, though I think they censored the close-up pictures. They took us seriously after that. Some of them wanted to talk to us, to see who we were, and some of them didn't want to talk to us because we were evil, and some didn't want to talk to us because we were forcing their hands. Sure, I'd cured a bunch of people of cancer, but I was freaky. They treated us like we'd done some kind of huge crime."
After a pause, he said,
"I mean, I had kind of done a huge crime. I'd turned several hundred animals inside out and made them into a big art installation, and I hadn't complied with the cops. But extenuating circumstances, okay?" There were extenuating circumstances. It wasn't my fault that turning several hundred animals inside out makes you look like the bad guy. They were beef cattle and mutton. My way was a hell of a lot quicker than the abattoir. But it's hard to be all. Let's listen to the magical inside-out animal shield man. He obviously has some good ideas.
He said,
"I didn't care what they thought. I wanted the attention. I wanted to break my NDAs. I wanted to let them know about the cryo plans and how we got shut down. I wanted to talk about you, about how we'd been going to save the world and then the cash dried up for no reason. And now we had a platform, so maybe the cash could come back somehow. But we'd scared a lot of people. We also had more enemies than we'd ever had before."
He said,
"I guess you could say we had beef."
When she did not laugh, he said,
"I can't believe nobody's ever going to laugh at my jokes again. I can't believe it. It's all gone. I'm the only one left. It's just me and you and no more jokes."
She said,
"I still love you."
And he laughed and said,
"That was a good one."
Then he wept again.
16.
Nona awoke with a start right before the door crashed open, like she had an extra sense for crashing doors. Honesty ran into the room, not even taking off his outside boots or his sand jacket, and he shouted,
"They're coming! They're here now! They're setting up that old video screen in the square tonight. They're going to screen some video at 5:30. It's them! It's zombies! They're back! Holy shit!"
"Language, Honesty," said someone else. Nona rubbed her eyes and struggled to sit up. She had been about to say the same thing, but all that came out was,
"Welcome!"
It was the voice of the angel, who had taken up position quite near the big whiteboard, one knee folded over the other.
"I've got to swear, sir," said Honesty. "You can't let me not swear about this. It'll give me inhibitions. Anyway," struck by fresh inspiration, "we're zombies here, sir. I'm not going to bother with school anymore. There'll be a war. I've got to deal full time."
Then you'd better attend maths lessons at least, said the angel dryly. I've seen your multiplication, Honesty. You're going to get stiffed.
Maybe maths, if I feel like it, allowed Honesty,
and he turned to the mats.
Hot sauce! Hot sauce! What are we going to do?
Hot sauce was sitting up on her mat, knees drawn to her chest, arms loosely dangling over her knees.
Wait and see, she said.
Kevin was waking up too, elbowing sleep out of his eyes and largely decorated with crumbs. Honesty said,
War, Kevin! It's gonna be war!
And Kevin just said,
Ugh!
And lay back down in bed, completely unmoved by war. Desperate for someone's approval, Honesty dropped to his haunches next to Nona and bawled,
Nona, what do you think?
Nona, still feeling as though her ears were stopped up with dreams, wriggled her nose so that she wouldn't yawn. Her mouth tasted like pencil. She said, with perfect bewilderment,
Who's here? What's going to be on the screen?
Necromancers, stupid, said Honesty.
Then he did have the grace to look at the angel, as though he were expecting a punishment. But all the angel did was shake her head and say quietly,
Try not to scare Kevin or Nona, Honesty. Okay,
said Honesty, a little abashed. Then,
I don't know. The militia's setting up, all wearing their old uniforms, all getting the netting out. I went to the square and nearly got my head shot off. Honestly, they're all jumpy that people are taking pot shots at them. I saw some old lady wailing in the street that we were all about to be lined up and executed. Well, they won't get me.
The door barreled open again. It was Born in the Morning and Beautiful Ruby, who had obviously raced each other up the stairs. They were panting like dogs, and Beautiful Ruby had to lean over and brace on his knees and still looked as though he might throw up. Nona was completely awake now. Born in the Morning said,
I won,
and Beautiful Ruby said,
He didn't, I won on the stairs,
and they squabbled right until Honesty said,
Boys, really, is this the time?
Mum says they're setting up the screen to tell us which resettlement to go to, panted Beautiful Ruby.
Born in the Morning said,
They can't tell us anything. The sky's still blue. They'll go crazy. They're lying.
Mum says doesn't matter. Do it anyway.
What does your mum know?
At least I've got a mum, and not only a bunch of mouldy old dads,
fired back Beautiful Ruby.
Don't fight,
begged Nona, just as they started to clasp each other around the neck in strangulation positions.
It's not fair. Too much is going on, and I don't want to think about your fight and the square and the screen.
The boys untangled from each other, but very reluctantly. It was at this moment of hesitation and surrender that the angel stood up and said, quietly, but in a voice that brooked no rebellion, Sit down on the mats, all of you. This wasn't hard for Nona, who was sitting down on the mats already. Same with Hot Sauce and Kevin. Born in the Morning and Beautiful Ruby and Honesty all came and flopped themselves down on the mats one by one. It didn't seem like any of the other kids had come back, only their gang. Nona was grateful in a way. She thought the tinies all ought to be at home. The angel said,
I want to ask you to promise all on your honour that none of you will go to the screening tonight. If your families want to go, fine, but that's not going to be a place for children.
Honesty said,
Who's a kid?
And the angel said, You are. Keep in mind, I've seen this before, house overtures. Tempers run high. There will be people who make decisions before they really think about them, and if you're there and one of you gets hurt, that's going to add to the fracas. I don't want to see your bodies paraded through the streets and your mugs up on photographs for one cause or the other. They were all silent. The angel said, Promise me, kids, please. I know you're an honourable bunch, especially you, Honesty. Honesty was touched.
I am, so I won't, he said. I swear, I mean, I could make a killing, so you've got me by the balls here.
Please never say that again, said the angel.
I won't go either, said Beautiful Ruby,
and Born in the Morning said, more reluctantly,
"Younger brother father might want me to go. He sometimes does."
Then Honesty gave him a really good burn twist on the arm so that the skin went dark red, and he yowled and said,
"But I won't! Stop it!"
Hot Sauce said, "I won't." And that seemed to be that. The angel didn't ask Nona, but Nona was a little bit troubled. She was sitting at the back as the oldest, and she was very close to Hot Sauce, so only she could see that Hot Sauce had crossed her fingers. Then Hot Sauce said,
"Why a video screen?"
"Well, why do you think a video screen? Why not just stand up there and talk through a loudspeaker?" said the angel. Nona, who thought about this kind of thing a great deal, immediately said,
"Oh, they don't want to get shot. They'd probably get shot by someone."
"Yes, well done," said the angel. The others were all immediately chuffed for her and demonstrated it. They slapped her on the back and said,
"Good one, Nona,"
and,
"You're smart, Nona,"
until Nona preened. But then, a few seconds later, she felt a little bit patronised and she said,
"Well, I wonder who it is who's going to speak."
"You'll find out. Why hurry?" said the angel. "Look, I'm the only teacher left here. Jolie has gone home to make sure her parents are all right. Let's cancel school for the evening and do something fun, why don't we? I don't feel like teaching anything very scientific. I'll get out the drawing paper and the paints and we can draw for a while. We'll leave the blackouts up and turn on the lights early." Born in the Morning said,
"My dad said to come right back or they'd come to pick me up."
And the angel said, "A quandary, is it? Well, I don't want to contradict your father's, but why not let them come and pick you up? I don't feel great about letting you walk alone through the streets right now. They'll be jabbing and temperature testing everyone in sight, even if they've seen you before, to make sure you're not house. If you want a needle jabbed in your ass, go ahead." It was so funny to hear the angel say "ass" that everyone lost it, Nona included, and even Kevin giggled, even though he was normally very serious. Hot Sauce smiled too, but a little distantly, like she was thinking of something else. She was happy enough to go with Nona to get out the big brown sheets of drawing paper and the nice-smelling boxes of fat wax crayons and chalk. The angel was at the light box, flicking switches and saying, "Draw your favourite animal. Go on. I've got a book of pictures if you want help." But as it turned out, everyone only wanted to draw Noodle. Noodle was asleep next to the teacher's desk on one of the abandoned mats, and Beautiful Ruby and Born in the Morning and even Honesty and Kevin squatted there to sketch his outline in chalk. Funny to think of Honesty drawing Noodle, really, when he'd just said no more school. That had hurt Nona's feelings a little bit. She didn't want to think about anyone leaving school. She sat back at one of the tables, feeling her weight as a teacher's aide, doodling a little bit on one of the big brown pieces of paper, but not quite joining in. And Hot Sauce perched on the desk next to her, still staring out the window. The angel went around closing them all. But she shouldn't have bothered, Nona thought. The outside was weirdly, deadly quiet. You couldn't even hear honking. Nona sketched some ideas of animals, what she thought animals should look like on best principles, and once satisfied with her work, put down her pencil and looked around instead. It almost seemed normal inside the classroom, though not as noisy as it would be any other day. Beautiful Ruby could create enough noise for 10 children at least. But everyone was busy, heads down and content with the chance to do some art. She saw that this troubled the angel. Whenever she looked out over them, she seemed to be cheerful, sometimes saying things like, "Only 6 legs, remember, Ruby. He was bred to have a single arboreal pair." But there was a sorry quirk to the corners of her thin, freckled mouth, like them all being so well-behaved was miserable in a way. Every so often she would stick her thumbs in her suspenders and whistle a note or two, like a back-of-truck seller on the street. And to Nona, those notes didn't sound cheerful at all.
At one point, Honesty stretched his arms out and cracked his neck and his knuckles, and he sidled over to the curtains to twitch them open to take a look at the street, and the angel said so sharply, "Be sensible, Honesty!" that he dropped the curtain like he'd been shot. But it was too late. He'd twitched it. The look Hot Sauce gave him physically staggered him. He went back to his painting so meekly that on any other day Nona would have screamed with laughter, but not right then. Nona looked up at the clock, gave it her best shot, squinted herself cross-eyed, then gave up. "Yes, Nona, you don't have to put up your hand, you know," said the angel. "You do work here."
"What's the time, please?"
"Getting on 5 o'clock," said the angel. Camilla always came to pick her up before lunchtime. That meant it was over 4 hours that Cam was overdue. Camilla had never been overdue in Nona's whole life. Something very obvious must have happened on her face, because the angel said a bit hastily, "Nona, can you take Noodle out? He hasn't been since before lunch, and it's not fair on the poor creature. He's got ageing kidneys."
"I'll go too," said Hot Sauce. "May 3, said Honesty.
Hot Sauce said,
"Stay put, 2's enough."
Honesty didn't even argue. Nona was happy enough to take Noodle's lead, and Noodle was even happier. He even whisked a bit. He was always good at sensing feelings. Nona thought she and Noodle were very alike in some ways, except she sadly did not have an arboreal anything. She and Hot Sauce shrugged on their dust jackets and buttoned up the sleeves in the cloakroom, and Nona clipped the leash to Noodle's collar and led him down the flight of black and cool and quiet stairs, Hot Sauce following behind. And once they were one floor down, she said,
"Camilla hasn't come for me." "Sleep at mine if she doesn't," said Hot Sauce.
This idea quite startled Nona, who had never slept apart from Camilla. She was homesick, thinking about her. She had thought Hot Sauce would maybe say something sympathetic or understanding, like,
"Don't worry about it."
But the problem with Hot Sauce was that she was a little bit like Cam. When you came to her with a problem, she gave you something to do about it. Nona didn't know what to say, so she blurted,
"You crossed your fingers when you said yes to the angel." "Didn't want to lie," said Hot Sauce. "Just in case of it becoming a lie."
"You always do what the angel says."
"Wrong. I always keep my promises to the angel. This time, I didn't promise."
Nona thought of Palamedes and said,
"That's not really the spirit of the law, even if it is the letter."
"What's that mean?"
"It means that even if technically you're not breaking the rule, you sort of are anyway, in your heart."
"So?"
Nona had no idea how to counter "so." By then, they were down at the bottom floor, and Hot Sauce was carefully checking the dust and concrete yard where Nona had so often taken Noodle for his lunchtime bathroom trips, peering through the glass-panelled doors where such a short time ago Nona had burst through with Crown. The red light still flashed above the double doors, which meant they were locked. Nona searched for ways to dissuade Hot Sauce and said,
"You said earlier the angel came in a truck with a grill."
"Yes. Never seen her come in a car before," said Hot Sauce.
"Come outside. We're clear."
They opened the heavy doors and the heat hit them as it always did, like putting on wet clothes. Even though it was later in the afternoon than Nona was used to, it was still hotter than hot, the kind of heat that prickled her all over, even underneath her hair, and made her shudder inside her dust jacket. Nona knelt down to unclip the lead, and Noodle, aware of his dignity, trundled out of sight to do his business behind a broken slab of rock. They watched his exit in silence.
"But doesn't that mean the angel's being looked after, and we don't have to worry?" said Nona after a while.
Hot Sauce didn't look so sure.
"Her driver stopped the car, and someone got out after the angel had gone into school," said Hot Sauce. "Checked the doorways of both the buildings opposite and the alleys. Professional."
Nona was enchanted.
"Maybe the angel's rich and important."
"She's vulnerable with us. We have to keep her safe, said Hot Sauce, more than ever.
Because of war?
Because of war.
Noodle came back to them and self-importantly kicked dirt behind him with his backmost legs. The middle set, the arboreal set, stretched out all the way to the middle of his body as he elongated himself. Then he yawned in a nice way to show that he was agreeable. Both Hot Sauce and Nona spent a little bit of time scratching him beneath his collar and on the bump where his tailbone started. Then, once he had had enough scratches, he sat on his haunches and they clipped the lead back on. When they went back into the foyer, Nona noticed that Hot Sauce lingered there a little, staring out into the street through the smeared glass. As Nona moved to mount the stairs, Hot Sauce said suddenly,
"Wait."
Nona waited. So did Noodle.
"They'll be starting the broadcast soon," said Hot Sauce.
Even if Nona had not been Nona, she felt that she would have been able to easily translate that stubborn set of Hot Sauce's shoulders, the readiness in her hands. Her whole body was turning to face the street, like wanting was somehow magnetic. Nona hedged.
"But the angel won't know where we've gone. Write a note. Give it to Noodle. He's smart."
Nona was thrilled with the idea of leaving a note on Noodle, and was sorry they hadn't struck on this idea before, to leave messages for the angel or for anyone else, but was deeply unhappy that the discovery had only been made in this particular situation.
"But I can't write," said Nona. "I can," said Hot Sauce.
Then she amended,
"Enough." "But Hot Sauce, the angel won't trust us after this."
"The asset doesn't have to trust you," said Hot Sauce, sounding all of a sudden very grown up and very professional and very much like Pyrrha.
Nona was so cowed that she didn't even ask what part of you the asset was. Hot Sauce followed this up with,
"I'll go alone if you don't want to."
"I'm a teacher's aide. I'm meant to look after you."
"Then look after me.
Unless you're scared."
"I'm not scared of anything," lied Nona, but added urgently, "You can't let me get hurt."
Hot Sauce just shrugged expressively at that, like, "I wasn't going to." And Nona wished she could have made Hot Sauce understand somehow. But it was all happening so quickly. She said helplessly,
"Even like a sunburn, or if there's a dust storm."
But Hot Sauce was ignoring her to rummage through what had long ago used to be someone's front desk, finding a bit of scrap paper, getting a pen and seeing if the ink had dried out. She began printing laboriously. It took her such a long time that Nona was hopeful the angel would get curious about where they were and come down and rumble their plan. But it was not to be. Hot Sauce knelt down by the dog and tucked the note into his collar, unclipped the leash and hung it up in the foyer, wedged the paper in tight so that it wouldn't fall out. Nona hoped devoutly that the angel would check it.
"Noodle," said Hot Sauce in the voice of command, "go upstairs."
Noodle looked at Hot Sauce in much the way that Nona wished she could look at Hot Sauce, a sort of, "Why aren't you coming with me? Are you dim?" expression. But when Hot Sauce repeated,
"Go upstairs,"
he wagged his tail a bit, then turned away and started mounting the stairs.
"Go," said Hot Sauce.
Nona and Hot Sauce made for the doors. Hot Sauce held the locking apparatus down and Nona shoved through. They were heavy fire doors and they took some pushing, though Crown had breezed through them like they had been feathers, and Hot Sauce flew after her. The door went click, locking itself behind them, and Hot Sauce said,
"Hold up! Go, go, go!"
and seized Nona's hand, and like a loosed bullet, ricocheted off down the street. It was all Nona could do to cling to her, her heart beating fast, regretting all of the decisions that had led her to that moment. Then she told herself sternly,
"Stop it!"
If she was going to do it, she thought, she might as well do it. She had some vague notion that when you committed to a thing, you had to do it all the way. Who had said that to her? Who had taught her that? "Once you've stepped in," said the voice in the back of her head, "you're in.
This isn't the Hokey Pokey.
She had remembered something. She had finally remembered something. Only she didn't have anyone to tell.
No Note was saved from being seriously out of breath by the fact that a few streets down, they caught up with a crowd of people shuffling forward. There was no talking, just the noise of moving feet. A truck chugging along, keeping pace with the pedestrians. A baby shushed in someone's arms. They were all hooded and jacketed, and without hesitation, Hot Sauce merged with the mass. It was incredible the way she moved. The moment she joined that crowd, her shoulders were flung back. She straightened up a whole inch. She swaggered with her hips. She aged 15 years, no longer a child among that throng of people. Nona dropped her hand and tried to do the same, straightening her back, softening her hips, and Hot Sauce, beneath her breath, just said, "Keep it up." They glued themselves shoulder to shoulder in that slow queue. They were being streamed into the big 8-lane street in front of the Civics building, where militia officers directed people from the backs of trucks or on their putt-putts, each one in a helmet, each one with a stick, most of them so badly frightened that Nona swore she could watch them sweat. They were turning some people away. The person with the baby was told to stay at the back of the crowd. The officer said in a low voice, "If they stampede, you'll be hurt." And the person with the baby said tonelessly, "Who cares? We might as well die." One older man in the crowd turned around and said quite clearly, enough that people flinched from the raised voice,
"Don't you give them that! Don't you give the Zeds that pleasure!"
"I don't care. We're probably being cattled."
"We aren't. We aren't," said the old man. "You see the trucks with the gates. You see the ladders. We aren't."
"Just don't bring that baby in," said the militia officer. "No kids, no cars. That's the rule." "You and whose army?" scoffed the person. But the old man said,
"Don't be a fool. You know whose army. Stay back here with me, sonny. Stay back here with me."
Nona was grateful that she and Hot Sauce passed unnoticed beneath the officer's nose. There was already a cross-faced collection of kids and teenagers in the back of a militia truck, grumbling and swapping cigarettes, some of them significantly older than Hot Sauce and looking a lot older than Nona. She ducked her head a little bit more inside her hood and tried to walk bigger. The crowd was thick and tall. Hot Sauce grabbed Nona's forearm and beelined between the people. Hot Sauce never cared who she jostled, until she stopped dead by one of the traffic lights, right next to a raggedy trash can. It was the kind of traffic light with a pole stuck through it crossways to hang signs off. Hot Sauce said,
"We're light enough. Come on. Here."
And suddenly there was a cradle for her foot, and Nona found herself boosted up the pole. She wrapped her legs around it and wriggled upward more out of fright than skill to sit on one of the crossbars. It squeaked a little, but it didn't feel as though it was going to immediately give way. Hot Sauce shinned up the other side. She sat beside Nona on the bit that stuck out opposite, and they laced their arms around the central pole and huddled there to watch the screen, head and shoulders above the rest of the crowd, their legs dangling. There was a huge noise of breathing, feet shuffling, coughs and sneezes, and the ignition and exhaustion noise of motors. But nobody was talking. Every so often someone would raise their voice and everyone around them would converge, as though they had all agreed beforehand that nobody would talk. Nona looked at the faces of the crowd, hooded against the heat and the dust, wondering briefly and hopefully if Pyrrha and Camilla or Palamedes were somehow among them, or Crown. It was like looking at the sea. Grey colours, drab green colours, every so often a paler, moving blotch of dun or tan. It made her feel a little sick to look at so many people, so many sets of shoulders and crossed arms, so she stared at the screen instead. It was still unfolding. They had set up the big metal frame, and shiny skin made of tessellated hexagons was slowly being stretched over it by people attached to guy lines. They had gotten nearly all of the way and were fixing the ends now, but a corner would come loose, and by the time they could repin it, an opposite corner would go. Nobody seemed to find this funny. Eventually, the pale grey shiny hexagon stuff was taut before them, as high as the second story of the school building, seemingly five times as wide. A trembling rectangle. They clipped power lines to the sides, and every so often white light would popple over one of the hexagons. There was a murmur from the crowd now, the first one that wasn't interrupted. People were looking at their watches. They were looking at the screen. The broadcast was late. At first, nothing happened, and for a moment Nona wondered if the broadcast hadn't been all some big joke or prank, if nothing was going to happen at all. Then one hexagon close to the corner rippled again. Each of its neighbours rippled, and a cascade of white light burned over the surface of the screen. There was an enormous screech from the collection of speakers piled untidily at the bottom of the screen. The crowd shuddered at the sound, and Nona's teeth set on edge. And then a voice suddenly emerged, a strange, low voice, speaking what everyone called house, caught halfway into a sentence.
"Resolved through official government channels, we will, of course, be happy to facilitate local elections to ensure the populace feels represented in those committees and resolutions. Under these conditions, no population-wide penalties will be levied. There will be no effects on resettlement. No legal ramifications will fall on groups or individuals, unless they are found guilty of terrorism in the aforementioned tribunal. Definitions of terrorism will be agreed on via elected representatives. All households and individuals can make a plea for restitution, which will be answered not through local authorities, but by the Emperor of the Nine Houses." For a moment, Nona could barely make heads or tails of it. It was lucky that it was House, which she and Pyrrha and Palamedes and Camilla spoke anyway, but not having anyone to look at foxed her. The voice was also saying a lot of words she had never before heard, in context or otherwise. She looked at Hot Sauce's face instead, half hidden beneath its hood, taut with listening. "This agreement," the voice echoed over the crowd, "is, as I speak, being transcribed and will be displayed in public in official local languages. How many do we have of those? 17. Well, someone's in for a long night. Displayed in public across the city as soon as translations have been finalised. The agreement will, without further negotiation, be considered legally binding. However, as I mentioned at the start of this broadcast, there are conditions that must be met. Any individual or group who violates these conditions renders the entire agreement, I'm sorry to say, null and void. The population will consequently represent a legal entity that has damaged property, acted unlawfully, committed or been accessory to murder, and performed a coup. This is per the contracts drawn up between you and the Emperor Undying over 700 years previous when this settlement was created. His offer of a break in that contract is entirely contingent on what you do now. Ah, give me a second. It seems we've fixed the equipment. We were using it in a barricade. How exciting. Anyway, we should have screen capabilities now. The hexagons writhed in agony, then resolved into a picture. What she was looking at, Nona could for a moment not tell. The heinous light bathed the crowd in white and rainbow colours. The screen made all the hues garish, 10 times more saturated than they should have been, as though they were drawn by someone who only had certain colours in their pencil box. The camera swung back and forth a few times, which made Nona nauseous. There were brief flashes of boots and legs, of whites so white they looked yellow, except where they were splotched with reds so red they looked orange, a multi-hued melange of faces and walls, before it settled on a desk. Seated at the desk, looking mildly annoyed, but perhaps like that was their normal expression, a person came into focus. Nona was charmed immediately by the clothing. The other boots and the other shirts and the other legs had looked dirty and shabby, from what she'd briefly seen. But not this person. Their coat was so spotlessly white that on the screen it looked blue. So was their neckerchief. The camera jumped a lot closer, focusing on this figure from the waist up now. And Nona could see that the neckerchief had a pretty gold pin sparkling in the folds. The person themselves was frighteningly pale of skin, and their hair alarmingly perfect in shape and form. Nona had never seen hair like that before. It was as though it had been sculpted, not grown. It was a rich, middling brown, thick and shiny even beneath the strong lights that had been aimed at it. Most people under such lights would have shown at least a little scalp. The expression was one of intense boredom. Their body language betrayed more interest. And their lips were a little too pale to be lips, but shiny, like the hair, as though someone had applied gloss. But their huge screen magnified eyes were quite pretty, Nona decided. Blue, with brown bits. She had never seen eyes like that before. "Good evening, New Row," said the person. Nobody responded. The young, well-dressed, dead-white person didn't seem to wait for them. They said instead, "Citizens, settlement, refugees, and all other residents, here is a list of the Emperor's conditions. 1. That all violence of any kind directed at cohort facilities ceases immediately, both the barracks and the surrounding residential area. 2. That all attacks on cohort soldiers cease immediately, whether they are inside cohort facilities or outside. 3. That all casualties belonging or suspected of belonging to the Emperor's 9 houses are surrendered and brought to the barracks gates. 4. That all members of the group calling themselves Blood of Eden cease operating in this area, and that anyone who comes into contact with Blood of Eden refuses succor, materiel or weapons from them. 5. Here the beautiful pale person paused for the first time, though it seemed that it was less for not knowing what to say and more for the sake of waiting. That any member of house personnel who has left their post, disappeared into the population, arrived after the siege and failed to make themselves known to the authorities, that anyone who serves the Emperor, cohort or otherwise, and who has made themselves absent without leave, present themselves to me immediately at the barracks during the next 24 hours. This is the amnesty period. Take it or leave it. Remember that it is in your power to turn Emperor's evidence and be granted the mercies of the King Undying. Their eyes unfocused a little. They looked at someone beyond the camera, not at the gathered crowd. Whatever was being said or gestured, it caused the speaker to quirk their perfect dark eyebrows in a kind of "Oh, for goodness sake," moment of impatience. "For those of you not privy to the beginning of the broadcast," it drawled, "I will inform you again that the Emperor cares deeply for New Row, that he has no desire to see the end that, I can assure you, first hand has come for the rebels of Ur. He wants to see resettlement and supply begin afresh. And believe me, the current disturbance in the planet's atmosphere is no barrier to the graces or the punishments that the Nine Houses can distribute. I say this with all the authority invested in me as Prince Ianthe Nibirius I, the Lictor Prince, the Saint of Awe. For a moment, the crowd was silent. The speech had to be translated for some people, anyone who didn't have really good house. But then the word spread through the crowd. Lictor, Lictor, Lictor. Prince Ianthe Nibirius said, I hope you find that comforting. Nobody found it comforting. The word was picking up, Lictor, 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 like a wind. The person, Prince Ianthe Nibirius, drawled, Yet that's not all, and made a brief and strange expression. It was one Nona had never seen, one Nona couldn't pass. The prince crooked their finger at someone Nona couldn't see, and the camera wobbled and pulled back to reveal that someone else was sitting right there at the same desk. The first person sat beautifully, while this second person sat with ramrod posture. They were dressed in the same bright white jacket as their counterpart, with the same tie. Their skin was rendered pallid in those hot lights, with the same weird waxy quality, warm-coloured skin that should have been a similar brown hue to Nona's, except that there was something wrong with it. Their crooked mouth was set in a serious, bloodless line, and their face held no expression at all. It was a grim mask on a forbidding face, with about as much animation as the portrait in We Suffer's office. The only alive thing about this second person was their hair, neatly arrayed with a wreath of finger bones and white, spring-like blossoms. Wildly red hair, red enough to make the electric hexagons struggle with it. It was the face of the girl in her dream. And their eyes. After that first astonishing moment, Nona stared without seeing in a wild paralysis of recognition. She was trembling. The face on the screen was the face of the girl in her dream. It was the picture of the face that Camilla and Palamedes had drawn for her, but so much more serious, so lifeless, so slack, like the girl was sleeping with her eyes open, that for a moment she thought she must be mistaken. Yet there she was. It was her, the girl in her dream. For a moment, Nona panicked, convinced that somehow the broadcast could see her too, that the girl was looking at her. But she had imagined it. Broadcasts didn't work that way. The Emperor has sent no intermediary to vouchsafe you, the first person said. Nona could barely hear for looking. All these promises are made by no lowlier personages than myself and Her Most Serene Highness, Crown Prince Kiriona Gaia, heir to the First House, the Emperor's only daughter. Nobody said anything. Prince Ianthe Nibirius continued. The Emperor Undying has sent nothing less than his own Tower Princes as gracious tokens of his extreme love and concern, his unimpeachable authority. There was something irrepressible hovering at the edges of the person called Prince Ianthe Nibirius's mouth at